Good morning and good afternoon, everybody, and also from the Swiss Re, welcome to our first quarter 2014 results conference call. I'm here with David Cole, our Group CFO, who has a dual mandate until September, well, until September 1st this year, when our new Group Chief Risk Officer, Patrick Grafenhaupt, starts. Also with us, you remember this setup from the full year results, is Matt Weber, Swiss Re's Group Chief Underwriting Officer. Before diving into the Q&A, now I'd like to hand over to David for a quick summary of our results.
Thank you, Michel. Indeed, good morning and good afternoon, everyone. It's, of course, my pleasure to be starting my new role with such a strong result. I know you've had a chance to look at it, so I'll just keep my summary very short. In a nutshell, we had a very strong performance coming off of underwriting in P&C Re, as well as, I think, benefiting across the group from the rebalancing actions that our asset management team implemented primarily during the course of 2013. You'll have seen Corporate Solutions continues to grow profitably as planned, and even while paid a dividend that was declared in Q1. Certainly, last but not least, we've also enjoyed very strong gross cash generation and dividends from Admin Re. They continue to be paid, and meanwhile have been paid in Q2 of $400 million. Expect a few questions around our strong solvency ratio, continuing strong solvency ratio under the SST of 241%, perhaps not fully expected by everyone on the phone. But together with the dividends that were paid to the group to date by all three of the business units, meanwhile, the group continues to be in a very comfortable capital position. And as you've heard from us in the past, you can rest assured that we will deploy these funds wisely. So with that comment, I'll hand it over to our Head of Investor Relations, Eric Xu, who will host the Q&A session.
Thank you very much, David. As the usual housekeeping comment, could please people restrict themselves to two questions each and re-register for follow-up questions? So operator, please, let's take the first question.
First question comes from Tom Dorner from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Yeah, so my first question is on the reserve additions that you mentioned in your pre-recorded video. Could you just go through them and then perhaps what the offsetting reserve releases are? And maybe just more generally say, I assume you're sticking with your guidance that we should not assume ongoing reserve releases going forward. And then the second question was on Admin Re. You mentioned that you've put in place a new credit facility. Maybe you could say, is this an indication that you're getting closer towards doing any new potential deals? So any color around that would be helpful. Thank you.
Okay, let me start off with the answer to both questions and see if one of my colleagues would like to add any additional comments. On the reserve question, as in previous quarters over the last, meanwhile, almost 3 years, it's fairly broad-based realization of prior year positive development, particularly on some of the relatively older years. I'm about years certainly well older than 2008 and beyond, across most geographies and most lines of business. So fairly broad-based free up a reserve, frankly speaking, for some of the same reasons that we've discussed in prior results discussions. Relatively low, extremely low level in some cases, level of claims coming in. And of course, we think we still are getting some of the benefit of the fact that inflation is a good bit more benign than what had perhaps originally been assumed whenever we were originally costing and reserving some of the business. We did put up some additional reserves in two specific areas in our U.K. motor business, where we've seen some reason to take a little bit of a different type of approach to some of the business that was traditionally looked at in terms of general liability. But increasingly, we see there are one or two areas where we need to look at it also from a quasi-life and health type of an approach. You've seen that earlier in the U.K. with the advent of these PPO types of court judgments. We also have taken a good look at our French business. So we put up some additional reserves specifically related to our French business in Q1. Other than that, we put up some additional reserves in our U.S. around the A&E space. Not the first time that we've done that, but what we basically are doing there is make sure we continue to track the actual emerging claims experience, but also take a little bit of a look around what others are doing in terms of the general level of reserving for that business, and just making sure that we're reserved at or close to the top of the benchmarks across the industry. In terms of your second question, the credit facility, so we're very happy, of course, to have been able to conclude this facility with a consortium of banks, 550 million sterling. Meanwhile, it's been signed and partially drawn down. The original use of proceeds there was to repay an intergroup loan, and indeed, there is still some capacity for us to use for potential new deals, And although I'm not in a position to announce anything specifically, we certainly would hope that in the course of the not too distant future, we'll be able to come back with information regarding new transactions in the admin re-space in the United Kingdom.
Thank you. Can I just follow up on the reserve point? Is your guidance still that one shouldn't assume continued positive evolution from here on in, and this is just the actual versus experience as it has been the last couple of quarters?
Yeah, indeed. Our guidance remains the same. So we don't incorporate it in our plan. The fact of the matter is, of course, we all watch what goes on in the marketplace, and we know what trends are out there and have certainly been in existence the last several years. But our guidance remains to not incorporate that in expectations.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Thomas Seidel from Sanford Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello, good afternoon, everyone. First question is on the pricing at the April renewal. I would like to have a bit more color, if possible, on what were the economic price changes which you used to report at the general renewal but didn't report this time. You just mentioned, you know, the prices have been softening, but the precise impact is not quite clear to me. The other thing is, could you give us an update on the cleaning of the YLT 2004 portfolio? As I see it now, nothing has yet happened in Q1. What is the outlook for the remainder of the year? You told us you maintain your 500 million impairment guidance, but where are you in this process is my simple question. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I'll perhaps ask Matt Weber to take the first question, and I'll come back on the YRT one.
Okay, thanks for the first and the second question. First question, on the price side, the price levels we saw in the market, in our opinion, are pretty well described by the broker reports. The Willis Dayan, the Guy Carpenter reports, they match our own opinion. You probably noticed that this quarter we decided to, different to the year before, to not disclose the rate adequacy for the April 1 renewal. If you allow me, I would like to explain this quickly. April 1 renewal is not a very big renewal. It is largely dominated by one single market, Japan, and this one single market is largely dominated by three or four large clients. So we actually decided not to disclose this information anymore explicitly because we felt it would be equivalent to disclosing a huge amount of information related to a small number of clients.
Okay. This is only now, or is it also for the upcoming renewals that you don't disclose it anymore?
It is for now, and we will have to make a decision for the upcoming renewals, but it is for now.
Okay, thanks, Matt. Let me then come back to your second question, which was update on where we are in terms of addressing the underperformance of the pre-2004 business in the United States. I think most of you will recognize last summer we announced our intent to robustly address the underperformance of that business, and we identified four different major levers that we thought we would be able to exercise in order to do just that. Let me just quickly go through all four of them, and I will conclude with the specific question I think you were asking me. So meanwhile, we've done quite a bit of work in rebalancing the asset portfolio, and I think you start to see the results of that already starting to flow through in our results, and we certainly were very happy with the overall developments and the return on investments as well as the running yield associated with those changes. We also have, meanwhile, taken significant steps in terms of addressing the actual capitalization and leverage of this business, so we've made good progress on that trigger, if you will, as well. We still have some work to do on that, but we remain quite convinced that we'll be successful in achieving the overall deleveraging goals that we articulated last July, which you may recall was a total reduction in leverage of about $4 billion by 2016. I anticipate being able to provide you with a further update on that later this year. Third lever was really just continuing to write really good quality business with our client franchise, and I'm very happy to report that we've been able to do just that. That's something we'll, of course, have to continue working on, and you'll see that coming through our results on an ongoing basis. But certainly what we've seen in the second half of 2013, indeed the first quarter of 2014, has been quite positive. Now, as to your question about where we're getting to with the actual existing YRT portfolio, big part of which we recaptured from Berkshire last year around this time. In fact, you may recall that led to about a $75 million profit in Q1 of 2013. Actually, somewhat similar to what Matt Weber just described in referring to the pricing levels. We're in a series of discussions, so we are now in discussions with all of our cedents related to this business. These are very important discussions. Obviously, it's commercially sensitive. So we have opted not to give any specific detailed information about that. However, we appreciate how important this is to you, and that's why we would like to very clearly reaffirm both our best estimate for the 2014 total impact pre-tax of $500 million associated with these businesses, as well as our firm commitment to a return on equity target of 10 to 12% in 2015.
And is it fair to assume that the majority of these activities conclude this year, or is it now more likely that we also see more activity next year?
So when I refer to the $500 million, I refer to it as the best estimate in two ways. Number one, I think that's the total economic impact of the outcome of these various negotiations. And we said 2014 because we think certainly the bulk of it, I can't say all of it, but we would hope that we'd be able to achieve an outcome such that we reflect that in 2014. That remains somewhat uncertain, of course, because it's subject to successful conclusion of our negotiations.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks a lot.
Sure.
The next question comes from Jason Kalambousis from Société Générale. Please go ahead.
Yes. Hi. Good morning there. The first question is on the amount that you have dividend up from the reinsurance business, from the P&C reinsurance. I just wanted to have a feeling if you feel that, you know, the excess capital that you have been talking, I think the last time you reported was in 2011, but which had remained pretty much untapped, if that is reducing that excess capital you had within this unit. On the same question for Corporate Solutions, the 300, because I think the 400, whatever, an 85 that you did last time was part of capital being released because, you know, clearly there was a lot of excess capital and you didn't need it as much for acquisitions. So again, the 300, just want to know, to put that in, to know how does that impact, again, the excess capital within Corso. The other thing is if you could talk about, just on life reinsurance, did you have any developments in the first quarter that are related to Australia?
Okay, simply because...
Any update?
Thanks for that. So three questions. I'll start with the last, probably suppose the shortest answer. No real material updates. The business was slightly profitable in Q1. We don't really expect any further significant developments on the reserving side, having taken quite significant action during the course of 2013. It remains a business that will be subject to some volatility, but we feel comfortable with where we got to at the end of 2013 in the Australian disability business. If I go back then to the second question, which is Corporate Solutions, so indeed we declared and meanwhile have paid $300 million of dividends up to the group. And I would think it would be fair to characterize the forward-looking statement as we've got Corporate Solutions more or less capitalized in the order of magnitude that we would see it continuing on. So it may have been a little bit of an extra dividend coming up this year. Future dividends, of course, will depend on ongoing profitability of that business unit. As to reinsurance, we have meanwhile paid $3.1 billion of dividends up to the group in Q2 of this year, declared and paid in Q2 of this year. The business reinsurance continues to be extremely well capitalized. I think if you look a little bit deeper into some of the reports, you'll see that the SST ratio is, as of our 2014 first report, sitting at 232%. So 232%. Versus what we've indicated as our targeted capital level for that business unit of roughly 175%.
So if I just on this, the 3.1 billion, you feel that you, it is very well capitalized, but you have, you still have left, you feel, all the excess capital that is within that unit there.
So, indeed, we're very happy with the $3.1 billion that has meanwhile been paid, and I would characterize reinsurance as it continues to be very well capitalized. So there is excess capital sitting in reinsurance.
All right. Thank you.
The next question comes from Vinit Malhotra from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi there. Just wanted to follow up one thing on the $3 billion redeployment topic, which we didn't really hear in this quarter, but obviously was highlighted clearly in the full year results. And I'm just wondering if there's any update on that. And the reason I ask is from a dual perspective. One is that some of that capital was going to be used for Admin Re, but now you've raised some leverage in Admin Re. So is that affecting that? And secondly, this $2.5 billion listed equity sales in the quarter. I remember this, the fact that principal investments were part of this bucket and the bucket was full. Does this equity sale leave you with some more room to maneuver on the $3 billion capital redeployment? So if you could just focus on that, please. And secondly, in your video on the renewal growth, you mentioned U.S. casualty, but to get to 14%, you obviously would have had to increase in Japan as well. And from all your peers, we're getting a sense that the Japanese market is falling. Is this an example of the same private placement kind of deals that we've been hearing have been driving Swiss Re's growth in the past? And if I can squeeze a tiny last one, the Spanish construction $80 million reserve release. Is this linked to the same business which we have been hearing a lot about in third quarter on the Tremor 1 guarantees? Thank you.
So I see at Goldman Sachs you folks apparently have identified new math where 2 equals 4. But let me see if we can pick them up, but we'll be perhaps a little bit short with some of our answers. So I'll start with the first question, the capital. Let me just reiterate our capital management philosophy, which is to, of course, grow our regular business, grow our regular dividend in conjunction with growth of profitable business, invest in good client-led opportunities that we see across the globe, across the various business units. We are open for opportunities to look at inorganic growth that may occur. And at the end of the day, we also have said that we are willing to, and we've demonstrated that, to return capital to shareholders if we find ourselves in a situation where we have significant excess capital that's not being deployed as per the strategy I just outlined. Now, the $3 billion that you referred to, I think, covered the period 2014-2015, and basically is comparable with the additional capital that we deployed over the years 2012-2013. So it's kind of rough order of magnitude. There are a number of different ways that we believe that we could deploy that capital. You referred to Admin Re, and although it's true that we have now close this facility, I think our aspirations for that business would certainly go beyond the level of funding that would be available under that facility. Bear in mind, some part of that facility was indeed used already to repay an intergroup loan. So we remain committed to our capital strategy. We think that number is the appropriate number. It covers the two-year period, not just the first quarter of 2014. As to your second question, indeed, we reduced our level of investment in listed equities, including, for a number of technical reasons, a small portion of credit ETFs, but basically listed equities, about $2.5 billion in Q1, basically brought us down to within our midterm plan, which you will recall was 5 to 10% for equities and alternatives. At the end of last year, we were sitting at 11%, so we've brought that back down to 9%. You correctly point out that we've been very explicit about the fact that our asset allocation into equities and alternatives includes our investments in principal investment positions as well. The short answer to your question is we'll maintain the guidance as well as the constraints that we articulated around the announcement of our full year results, which is we don't anticipate the overall level of principal investments to significantly grow. It may grow somewhat, but more in line with the overall growth of the business. There may be some realizations within the existing principal investments portfolio, and of course that would partially fund potential new investments there as well. As to casualty, if you don't mind, I think, as well as what's happened with our Spanish construction reserves, I may turn both those questions over to my colleague, Matt Weber. So let me just reiterate. The third question is, can we give a little bit more insight into the contributors to the actual growth in our renewals with April? And the second, I think, was just a little bit more detail around the developments on the Spanish construction reserves.
Okay, so with respect to the growth, most of it was driven by growth on U.S. casualty side. Please remember that price levels are going down in large parts of the world, but there are some exceptions, and probably the biggest exception right now is primary U.S. casualty. And as a result of this, we actually feel quite privileged that we were able to increase our proportional casualty writings in the US. You asked, is it more flow business or a small number of large deals? I can tell you it's somewhere in between. It's four or five mid-sized deals which don't qualify according to our own definition to large deals, but they are at the upper end of the spectrum of flow business. It did not just happen like this. Quite frankly, we have been working several quarters, in one case several years, with the clients on this, providing services, agreeing on services to be provided. And we feel fortunate that this quarter we were actually successful translating this into a number of mid-sized deals. So the growth comes from U.S. casualty proportional business. And with respect to the Spanish guarantee business, yes, it is Spanish guarantee business, and we have just one Spanish guarantee book. So it's also known as the decennial business, and we have seen favorable development there, quite sizable, as a result of the absence of large losses, which happen in the expectation, but they don't happen every quarter, and this quarter they did not happen to the amount we expected them to happen.
All right. Thanks very much, and apologies for taking a bit more time. Thanks very much.
It's okay.
The next question comes from Andrew Ritchie from Autonomous. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi there. Two quick questions. Just for clarification, on Admin Re, where you've taken on external leverage, I appreciate some of that's been used to repay an internal loan. But I think, am I right in thinking you can't do anything else to optimise the capital in Admin Re, because there obviously still is some excess capital there. So it's not a case of doing any kind of equity for debt swap in that unit. The new leverage is purely to finance new deals. Is that just to clarify that's the case? And I guess you hinted at some kind of pipeline of deals. Maybe if there's any more sort of colour on that, that would be helpful. And the second question, back to the growth in casualty for Matt. I shouldn't think of the casualty business that you're growing as unusual from typical casualty business. In other words, you know, the tail is going to be reasonably long tail. It will have reasonably high attritional loss ratios. I appreciate the overall ROE will encompass some investment income, but at what point will that growth in casualty start to filter through into, you know, as we shift to a higher group attritional loss ratio? Just a bit more colour on that would be useful. Thanks.
Matt, would you like to just go ahead and take that one as an extension
of
the last?
So answering the second question on casualty, there is, other than the way how we were able to source the business by basically
providing services and expertise in exchange for additional business. Nothing really unusual about this business. These are typical quota shares, U.S. casualty quota shares, containing a lot of general liability. In two cases, motor liability is included. The tails are several years, but nothing unusual. So please don't think of U.S. workers' compensation business type tails. We continue to have pretty much no appetite for this type of business. So it's a tail which is within the first 10 years of the spectrum, and we are not talking 20, 30 or 40 years tail.
So we start to see the group attritional creep up, I guess, from next year as you earn through this business.
Yeah, on the casualty side, it starts on a very low level, pretty much the day after you write the business, and then it goes up, and the speed with which it goes up is determined by the tail, and sometimes a little bit, there is a little bit volatility due to individual large losses or the absence of these large losses, and again, the tail is less than 10 years on average.
Let me then come back to your first question, which was further detail around the admin refacility. So, indeed, that was a sterling $550 million facility, part of which was used to repay this intergroup loan. Actually, the overall facility is quite important to our admin re-business because at the end of the day, it is part of our management actions to reduce the weighted average cost of capital of this business. And indeed, there's still some availability under that facility to potentially fund new transactions. I would not say that we have exhausted all of the different management actions that we have in terms of optimizing the capital structure there. We'll look to continually seek to optimize that. At some point, we imagine that as we move into a Solvency II type of world, there will also be a potentially material adjustment in the level of statutory capital required. In terms of the pipeline, I guess everyone recalls that toward the back end of last year, we were involved in some discussions with another party about a possible a combination in the UK. One of the consequences of that is that a number of the client transactions that we were having were put on temporary abeyance until we got clarity around where we would move with that transaction. And subsequent to those discussions coming to an end, we've picked back up the dialogue with our clients. And I don't, I'm not in a position to be able to make a specific announcement, but we remain, I think, quite optimistic that there are several transactions that we can see coming to us in the UK market in the admin re space.
Okay, and just to be clear, so is there any sort of one-off capital release that admin re UK would await further clarity on the regulatory environment, essentially?
I wouldn't say it that way. I would simply say that's one of the possibilities that may lead to additional capital optimization opportunities for us, but it's not the only one, and we're not in any shape or form waiting for regulatory changes to happen.
Okay. Thank you.
The next question comes from Kamran Hossain from RBC. Please go ahead.
Hi, Kamran Hossain from RBC. Two questions. First, on life reinsurance. I heard from one of your peers this morning that they're seeing increasing competition in life reinsurance. Just hoping to get your take on that, whether actually you're seeing that as well. And secondly, just coming back to Admin Re, just thinking about acquisition costs going forward. Obviously, David mentioned that, you know, there could be potential transactions coming up. Is kind of Q1 a decent run rate for acquisition costs at Admin Re?
So let me take the second question. No, I think actually acquisition costs clearly would, amongst other things, reflect actual transactions that we would do. So there would be some variability around that, depending on transactions that we would be involved with at any given time. So one quarter's numbers are perhaps not necessarily a good indicator of subsequent periods. In terms of competition, maybe I'll take it first very high level generically and then ask Matt if you'd like to add anything to that. What I will say is our business has been, I think, growing quite nicely. We see good opportunities, and we've been successful in closing transactions around the globe. So we feel, I think, quite good about our prospects there. Once again, we have the capability of leveraging our very deep client knowledge and our ability to structure bespoke transactions that are quite meaningful to our clients. So there may be different movements going on in the marketplace, some people increasing capacity, others decreasing perhaps, but we actually see very good progress being made with our clients in this space. So, Matt, if you'd like to add anything.
Yeah, maybe if I could add here, I can relate to the statement. If I think of life business in the UK, there we are definitely seeing increasing competition on the insurance side. Luckily for us, we have a quite well-diversified portfolio. We do not see this increasing competition on a global level across all markets. And in addition to that, I can tell you that, especially on the life side, our pipeline with respect to large and tailored transactions looks actually quite attractive, quite full, and is keeping us busy. And these type of deals typically are not subject to the normal demand supply balance because not every insurance company is willing or able to provide capacity on those deals.
Perfect. Thanks very much for the clarification.
The next question comes from William Hawkins from KBW. Please go ahead.
Hello. Thank you very much. My first question, I think I'm going over a bit of ground again, but I'm still intrigued on your use of capital. By my numbers on what you've said about dividends, you've pretty much already accumulated in the centre enough to cover an ordinary dividend and a special dividend of last year. Without prejudging that, you guys have made it very clear you want to deploy that capital. But even at the full year, when you were talking about $3 billion, it was very hard to see where this capital was being deployed over the next couple of years. So I'm wondering if, again, maybe Michelle, if you could add a bit more colour on that. And as a sub-question to that, without being cheeky, I'm confused, given that Admin Re seems to be one of the clearest areas for deploying capital, why are you being so clear that dividends are coming out of Admin Re? I'd have thought you'd just leave the capital there if you're going to deploy it. And then secondly, in the non-life business, could you talk a little bit about the divergent experience between P&C Re and Corporate Solutions this quarter? Corporate Solutions is okay in itself, but you know it's above your 95% expectation when P&C Re was below. You didn't seem quite so clear that man-made losses were benign in P&C Re, in Corporate Solutions, and the reserve development was negative in Corporate Solutions as well. So there seems to be a bit of divergence between great P&C results and just a good Corporate Solutions result, and I wondered if you could just maybe talk a bit about that.
William, thank you for asking me a question. I was getting concerned that I wouldn't have any question. On your use of capital, definitely, if you take the three business units, first, there is one for which, as we say, it's natural. It's definitely acquisition is part of the business. That's Admin Re. There is another one in which the business unit has been definitively capitalized for a normal growth until 2015, but we never excluded, in the case of Corporate Solution, inorganic growth opportunities. And there is a third one for which I would say the structure is definitively quite full, but we can definitively use the structure that we have in order to use more capital simply in the normal business that we have. I do not exclude anything inorganic, but if you take the order, there is one piece of our business which is naturally requesting capital for inorganic growth because that's what they do. The second one, we didn't exclude it because of the size that they have, and we know that moving away from the 2% market share that we have, there is probably some potential inorganic growth opportunity. In reinsurance, we're confident that we can let the capital flow in the current structure and use it for providing capacity for our clients. But again, I do not exclude anything. But that's the answer that I can give you to that, plus the fact that has been mentioned by David, that we simply, use the same number for 2014-2015 that we were using for 2012-2013. We know that definitively in 2012-2013 there was also the recapture of the Berkshire quota share. But it's a number which is, you know, it's there are still 20 months to go, and I'm quite confident that we are not that short of ideas that we don't find use for this capital in the next 20 months. And I gave you more or less the order of priorities.
Thanks. And just on the technical point about why getting a dividend from Admin Re when you clearly have such a healthy pipeline?
So if you don't mind, William, I'll take this one. You know, we think it's a good discipline for all of our business units to get in the habit of paying cash up to the group. And certainly when we have excess cash, excess capital sitting, it doesn't have an immediate use, we're going to want to sweep that up to the group. So don't leave that as any sort of indication about the timing of future transactions in Admin Re. Simply as a matter of discipline, we'd like to have that well implemented and practiced across the group.
Okay. Taking the second question, and I was asked to go closer to the microphone. I hope you can hear me now. With respect to the so-called diverging experience between reinsurance and Admin Re, it's just fully 100% explained by good luck or a little bit of bad luck related to large man-made losses. On the reinsurance side, the normalized combined ratio after correcting for Nat Cat and prior year development is almost exactly where we wanted it to be and where we predicted it to be. Remember, the guidance was 95%. We are a little bit lower, and that's where we have to be, actually, because we are in Q1. And when we came up with our guidance, we expected prices to continue to soften a little bit as the year goes by. So this means you need to be a little bit better at the beginning compared to Q3 and Q4, and relative to this, we feel we are pretty much almost exactly on track on the insurance side. On the corporate solutions side, we had this quarter a little bit more than expected large man-made loss activity. In a normal quarter, we expect something to happen of the order of 60 million in terms of large man-made losses greater than 10 million. That's how we define them on the corporate solutions side. What we actually experienced was 91 million as per page 24 of the slide deck. This translates into 3.5% combined ratio points. If we subtract this from the 96.8, we end up again at the number at around 93.5 in that region. And again, this number is exactly where we expect it to be, given the plan to come up with a combined ratio of 95% for the full year. So absolutely no concern from my side.
That's very clear. Thank you.
Question comes from Andy Brockfield from Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Two questions, please. One, the US casualty, you made an interesting comment about your expertise helping you get the business in terms of helping your clients, I guess, underwrite their business. I was just wondering, can you explain whether this is insurers going into casualty lines in a way they hadn't done before, so are you helping them move into new territory, or whether it's just simply refining an established business already in that business space? The second question is a very simple one, actually. On the SST, can you remind me whether you include the dividends proposed at the year end, or whether that we then have to take that out, sort of get it and add now, and also what the broadly what the corresponding benefit would have been to capital ratios from the equity sell down as well.
Okay, I will take the first question, and David Cole will take the second question. With respect to the services we provide, it very much depends, and they are different market by market. The U.S., especially the U.S. casualty market, is an extremely mature market. And quite frankly, there we are not really heavily engaged in identifying new segments or new product developments. It is more we are offering ourselves as a strategic discussion partner. We also have our casualty modeling tool, which allows to analyze portfolios and do exposure-based analysis. And this tool, actually, we have started using it also in the U.S., but not only in the U.S., in order to provide services to our casualty clients. Sometimes the services are directly related to the business we write. Sometimes the services are of importance to the client, and the client basically rewards us by taking a share of a motor quota share or of a general liability quota share, even if the services are not directly related to motor and general liability.
So this is not helping new companies establish new businesses. This is established businesses just helping them refine what they already do.
So what you just said is completely correct, yes. That's right.
Okay, thanks.
So Andy, this is David. Let me take your second question, which is probably quite interesting to others as well. Very straightforward answer, in fact. So we do the SST twice a year. Each time it's on a 12-month forward-looking basis. So the SST number that we publish today, 241% for the group, 232% for SRZ, is as of the 31st of December on a forward-looking basis for 12 months, and therefore it also includes planned dividends. So it includes the 3.1 dividends that we have meanwhile paid during the course of this year.
Great, and the impact on the equity sell down. Are you able to sort of give a broad feel for what that might have equivalent to?
I'm sorry. Do you mind repeating the question? I didn't hear the full question.
Sorry, the sell down of the equities in the first quarter.
Oh, got it. No, that would not have been included. So that's not included yet.
And any sense on the impact that would have roughly?
Yeah, I in the overall scheme of things, I don't think it's going to be a material impact. So it would certainly be less than $1 billion on the overall figure. So I don't think it's a material impact.
Okay, great. Thanks very much.
The next question comes from Thomas Seidel from Sanford Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking another set of questions. They're both relating to more recent claims experience. So the U.S. insurers basically reported about higher claims ratios coming from the shift of the polar vortex, as I understand it. How was your experience with that? Are these claims reports already sent to Swiss Re, or should we expect the impact of this to come at a later quarter? And then on the life side, some of the your larger peers on the U.S. side reported higher U.S. mortality and morbidity. Is it also something you basically see more recently?
So I must admit, I did not understand acoustically the first question. So I would like to answer the second question. Maybe if you could repeat the first question, that would be helpful. With respect to mortality and morbidity in the U.S. on the life side, we did not see a deterioration and no negative deviation relative to our assumptions. So absolutely not. Could you please repeat the first question?
Sure. There were simply a lot of weather losses on the in North America, as I understand, due to the shift of the polar vortex. And I wonder, given the low underlying loss ratio, if Swiss Re has already seen claims reports from the clients, or is it to come in later quarters that your clients report these weather losses to you, given your sizable U.S. exposure?
Yeah, so typically, so thank you. Now I did understand it acoustically. So in the US, typically the first two quarters, quite frankly, especially the second quarter, are heavily exposed to non-hurricane weather losses. In the first quarter, snow, and then moving over to hail, tornado. You are probably aware of a relatively severe outbreak of tornadoes a couple of weeks ago. Typically, these losses don't hit the Cat XL treaties because they stay within the retentions. It is possible that we will pick up here and there something under a proportional treaty. It's actually likely that this happens, but at this point in time, there is actually nothing unusual to be expected there. We had this type of activities also the year before and the years before, and this is just typical for the first two quarters of the year.
Mm-hmm. So now higher level of, let's say, frozen pipes and stuff like this, like the US insurers reported the other day?
We will have some losses, but in the grand scheme, I think they will be in the expectation. So nothing unusual there.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Matt.
The last question for today comes from Jason Kalambousis from Societe Generale. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thanks for the follow-up. A quick one, just coming back to the question on the excess capital in the PNC reinsurance. I think it was in the presentation, the full-year presentation, where I think George had said that there is about $1.5 billion left in the U.S., but there are regulatory issues that make the fungibility difficult. So some may be released at a certain point or be optimized. Am I to understand that this is still the case, i.e. there is no part of it that was part of the $3.1 billion that we saw in the Q2 coming through? And the second thing is just, do you have somewhere the reinsurance income breakdown table that we used to have? I didn't see it in the presentation, but maybe it's somewhere else.
Okay, I'm not exactly 100% certain about the second question, so I may come back to you to make sure I understand exactly. As to the first question, indeed, I recall George's earlier comment. So we did have some excess capital sitting in one of our U.S. carriers under PNC Re. Part of that capital, we were, after approval of the local authorities, regulators, we took out during the course of 2013. Part of it we actually would anticipate taking out during the course of this year. So that part that was taken out last year would actually be part of the $3.1 billion. And we just have ongoing process around the globe with all of our business units and looking at the appropriate level of capitalization and where we find situations where there's excess above and beyond not only the regulatory requirements but the level of capital we think is appropriate given the nature of the business and what our clients would expect us to hold as a reinsurer. We'll look for opportunities to take that out. So that process took place in 2013 for our U.S. PNC Re carriers and will take place this year as well. The second question, I have to say, I'm not 100% certain. Perhaps you can look at slide 25, where we show kind of a breakdown by the main PNC business lines.
No, it was on life reinsurance. Sorry.
Okay. Well, life reinsurance. Yeah. So let me say a little something about life reinsurance. I think Matt Weber just indicated that in terms of our experience in Q1, if anything was added, if not maybe here and there a little bit above, i.e., more positive than our expectations. As I mentioned earlier to another question, we're in a number of discussions with a number of our important clients related to part of our business. As part of the discussions that we were having around Berkshire Hathaway recapture last year, we gave a little bit more insight into underlying product lines on a quarter-by-quarter basis. But what we'd like to do now with life and health is basically bring it back in line with the way that we report on other product lines across the group. So we're going to be a little bit more restrictive with the quarterly information, also considering our commercial interest.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. So it seems that we have no more questions on the call. So I guess that that concludes the Q&A session. Please feel free to give the investor relations team a call at any time. Just as a comment on the next events, we have an investor's day on the 3rd of July. So that's in less than 2 months' time from now. It will take place in London, and we're going to hold it back-to-back days with Allianz in the same location in the city of London. Final agenda and logistics will be sent out to you soon. That concludes the meeting. Thank you very much, everybody, for your participation, and goodbye.